You're listening to CertSecurity.com Newsmakers. I'm Rob Westervelt. This is Episode 2, Assistant Cybersecurity Secretary Greg Garcia. In this edition, Information Security Magazine's Michael Mimoso and Marcia Savage sat down with Greg Garcia in February at the RSA Conference 2007. Garcia is in his sixth month as Assistant Secretary for Cybersecurity and Telecommunications at the Department of Homeland Security. He attended RSA to lay out his strategy moving forward. In this discussion, Garcia talks about the need for public-private partnerships and explains why network convergence will present what he calls a breeding ground for security problems. He starts off explaining his priorities.
Okay, so three major priorities. the first one that I mentioned was raising the bar across the federal agencies. There is an inconsistent level of security across all of the federal agencies. Some are doing very well, some are not doing very well. But what we do know is that there is a lot of infiltrations into government networks, and we need to stop those from happening. My intent is to work with other key agencies like the Office of Management and Budget. They've got the power of the purse, with the Defense Department, which runs the largest government network, and work in an interagency cooperative basis to introduce a suite of security practices that all federal agencies ought to be deploying as a baseline, as a minimum. They're not resource intensive. They should be quite doable. And including every agency ought to have a chief information security officer. Every agency ought to have a 24/7 watch. Every agency ought to build security requirements into their IT acquisitions. Every agency ought to be deploying specific guidance from NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. They have an 800 series, it's called, of security guidance for federal agencies. Agencies ought to be doing this. Agencies ought to be subscribing to a service delivered by my organization. It's called Einstein. It's an intrusion detection service that is subscribed to among the agencies, and we can monitor their network activity, our subscribers, and say, do you see what's happening on your network? Here's what you need to do to fix it. Plug the hole. That's priority number one. Priority number two takes us then to the private sector, and there are two major aspects of that. The first one is in the prepare and deter category. We talked during the town hall about the National Infrastructure Protection Plan and the sector-specific plans. We are looked to in DHS to help drive a national risk assessment. Where are the vulnerabilities in all of our critical infrastructures? What are we going to do to mitigate those vulnerabilities? What specific steps are we going to take? By when? Using what metrics for success? That risk assessment process will take the form of this sector-specific plan. My priority is to begin that implementation process this year. And it's an evolutionary process. It's an iterative process. It's a living document. And because as threats continue to evolve, our adversaries are nimble and mobile, we need to continue. And natural disasters. I mean, it's an all-hazards approach to our critical infrastructure vulnerability. And finally, the operational side. I mentioned in the town hall about co-locating our U.S. CERT operational capability with the communications sector operational capability and the IT ISAC. If we have in the same room, in the same hub, representatives from the communications sector, the IT sector, and the government, the U.S. CERT, and we're monitoring network activity, sharing information about what we see, how we interpret it and analyze it, we're going to be better prepared to respond to an incident as it's happening. my goal is to set up that hub and make it very robust this year and draft a very clear CONOPS, a concept of operations, for how U.S. CERT will interact with our private sector partners in information sharing and incident response. Because that's a very important point. Who does what and when? Who do you call? By when? Under what circumstances? So you really have to have clear lanes of the road that establish information sharing protocols. So when we have this hub of capability coupled with very clearly stipulated roles and responsibilities, I think we're going to have the beginnings of that national response capability that the Congress is demanding of us, that the public is demanding of us. And once we have that hub, and if you visualize spokes coming out of that hub, and each spoke is connected to the other sector ISACs, the other operational groups. Financial services has their own ISAC, transportation, electricity, water, chemicals. They all have these gatherings, these organizations of industry sector representatives who are sharing information among themselves. If we can have a hub where everyone is feeding information into our U.S. CERT, and they are receiving information from that same hub, then we've got some real-time synthesized, synchronized information sharing that's all based on a trust relationship, understanding that that there's a synergy to be had. What's the expression? The sum is greater than the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. That's exactly what I'm looking to. So it's raise the bar for government security, implement the national risk assessment in the form of the sector-specific plans, and build out our operational capability in partnership with the private sector. 1, 2, 3.
In terms of raising the bar for government security, what's your opinion on FISMA? Is it working? Does it need an overhaul? Does it need just some slight tweaks?
I think FISMA is one part of an overall security plan, but FISMA alone is not the sole answer. I think what we're introducing to the agencies are some fairly simple, cost-effective methods of managing their information environment that gets directly and specifically to security. FISMA itself is not entirely dedicated to security. I think that is one part of the overall puzzle, and we're working with it's OMB's responsibility to push FISMA requirements out to the federal agencies, and we're working with OMB to make sure we have a strong package of security procedures for the agencies.
During the town hall, you mentioned incentives to get organizations mm-hmm. to implement more security. Could you elaborate on that?
There have been a lot of different ideas for incentives, and I think what we need to do is test them with the ultimate consumers of those incentives, the companies or the industry sectors that would say, yes, if you offered me, if I knew that I could get a tax break, or if I knew that I could get better insurance rates, if I knew that I could get better loan rates, if I knew that that if I deployed this industry standard for secure enterprise management, if I deployed that, I would be exempt from liability if something actually did happen. Then I would invest in more security and security standards and training and practices, technology, but. You need to go into devising incentive models with a clear understanding of how business does business, what drives their business decision making. I don't think we've really done a thorough, comprehensive look at all of the critical infrastructures. How do we get them to invest in security based on their business model, based on how they articulate a return on investment? And then once you do that, what laws are in place that might be hampering that? What laws don't exist that ought to be to incentivize that? And I'm not talking about a regulatory model. I'm talking about pushing, tweaking the marketplace. Because ultimately, the I think the answer really relies on the innovation in the marketplace that's going to drive investment, and a lot of it is customer driven. That's where the money is. Customer will do business with me if they know that I'm going to manage their information securely. Maybe they won't do business with me if I can't show them that I am doing that. So that's what I want to explore over the next couple of years.
How did your role?
Thank you.
Differ from some of your predecessors?
I've never had a predecessor. I'm the first assistant secretary for cybersecurity and telecommunications. I'm the only person of this rank who had cybersecurity in their title. People in this organization before were head of the National Cybersecurity Division, head of the National Communications System. I have those components under my broader organization, which is cybersecurity and telecommunications. There was once a White House advisor, but that is not a that didn't have the same level of authority across agencies and with the public. So what's different is a level of commitment by the Department of Homeland Security, by Secretary Chertoff, that recognizes that the private sector and our government, state, federal, local partners need to know that the resources and the commitments that they're going to be asked to commit to strengthening our cyber posture nationally are going to be followed up on, and that there's someone at the helm who's got the authority and the influence and the visibility to actually make it happen. If you've got someone several steps down below a cabinet level, that person simply isn't going to have the same clout. Rank does matter.
Do you find Baker and Towning skepticism by the industry? You know, I think there's been like the Risk Security Industry Alliance, I think, gave like a D+ to federal government for its cybersecurity efforts. So, you know, how do you respond to those?
Cybersecurity Industry Alliance is a great partner, and they take this as seriously as I do. And I'm going to be looking to all of my partners and the Congress and others to continue to hold our feet to the fire. We all take this very seriously, and we rely on the expert counsel of our industry partners. Quite clearly this week, I have seen a great amount of optimism from my industry partners. And I came from industry, so I was among those who early on were critical of the management of the cybersecurity function, because DHS was a young organization and was getting itself organized around this mission space. And now they've got somebody on top of that mission chain. I think everyone is really hopeful and optimistic now that we have a common view of what needs to be done, and that they've got somebody in place who's going to make things happen. So I look forward to continuing to work with CSIA. They are a partner, as are the other industry groups that we had talked about in the town hall.
The audience here is primarily teachers. What's your interaction with them? What kind of feedback do you hear from them in terms of what they'd like to see from the government?
I've had a lot of conversations this week with not just the vendor community, but with representatives from other sectors. I've had conversations with people from financial services, from insurance, from chemicals, from automotive, the CISO of an airline, and I think there's a common theme among them, and that is, it's people, process, and technology. We all understand it's a three-legged stool, they're all coming here to see what the latest technological innovations are for security, but they're also here to exchange information about how they're managing their networks, how they're deploying that technology, and how are they training their people to implement the technology, and training their people to practice good cyber hygiene. And so those are the three. And you really can't have a secure enterprise management without all of those three functioning in tandem. So they look to DHS to help coordinate all of the pieces of that puzzle, because all along the technology chain you've got software, you've got hardware, you've got networking devices, you've got the ISPs and the carriers. We're here to try to bring everyone together, and I think that's the big expectation for DHS. They're not asking us to regulate. They're not asking us to mandate technological standards. They're asking us to partner and take leadership. And I heard it over and over again from my colleagues in the IT sector when I left the private sector to join DHS is we just need someone to raise their hand and take charge and say, let's get to work. So I really do see a lot of optimism this week. I've had a lot of meetings with industry groups, a lot of one-on-ones with industry representatives, so I'm very encouraged.
Can you talk a little bit about the threat landscape?
Sort of grasp what areas. To me, I touched on this in the town hall. To me, one of the biggest threats we face is complacency and a lack of urgency among all of the stakeholders. I have this job in part to raise awareness and to push us all, to push the federal agencies, state and locals, and to push the private sector to make the investments that have to be made. And ensure that consumers know that they share responsibility as well, and the software vendors and the hardware vendors all up and down the value chain, as I mentioned. So that's a very big threat. And the threats from the outside are constantly evolving, as I said. They are sophisticated. They are organized. We need to be prepared for all hazards, the hackers and the crime rings, and they're staying at it, and we're seeing it. We don't know the source of the root server attacks that happened 2 days ago, but that's what we're vigilant against, that appeared to be a denial of service attack, and we want to continue to be vigilant, both in terms of the way we share information about seeing these attacks coming and how to respond to them, and in the longer term, committing research dollars to finding better ways to prevent these from happening in the first place.
I was at a CSIA panel this morning, and one of the points that they raised with the recent turnover in Congress, that there's a certain amount of re-education.
Yeah.
How does that trickle down to what you need to do to hammer things, slow them down at all?
Actually, I look at that as a great opportunity. When you have a new Congress in place, new people coming into office, trying to get a handle on all of the challenges that we face as a nation, the homeland security is one of the highest priorities of this nation, the highest and one of the most difficult challenges. And the cybersecurity and telecommunications challenge is a good component of that. So if I have the opportunity to go up to the Congress and educate them, to testify, to brief them on what some of these threats are, what the vulnerabilities are, what we're doing to address that, Congress is a key partner. So I welcome every opportunity to get up there and talk to them. And that's one of the first things I said when I joined DHS, is I want to have a very proactive strategy and make sure that the Congress understands the complexity of the landscape that we're dealing with, and how we address this and how it is a shared responsibility. And the Congress has a responsibility too. There are 535 members of Congress, and they've got a lot of constituents that they can be communicating with.
That concludes our special CertSecurity.com Newsmaker podcast, where we feature in-depth interviews with thought leaders in the information security market. The latest information security news is always available at our news page at CertSecurity.com/news. And you can always catch our Security Wire weekly podcasts featuring summaries of our latest news and interviews with security professionals at searchsecurity.com/podcast. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.